F2A. Number 6B.
Yes. So he takes up that whole question and says, apparently you can't see that you have to overcome the old man with his deeds. And he calls that old man with his deeds, the son of perdition, as I said. Sometimes he calls him the son of sin. We will call it the mortal. And so he says, well, what is necessary really is that you show forth those qualities which are necessary in order that you can triumph over the mortal sense of manhood. And he gives them a whole series of advice. We could establish that quickly when we say to ourselves now, what is it that can triumph over the son of perdition? What is that quality of manhood that is necessary? Actually, what we would do, we would go through the seven synonymous terms and would say, well, if I fall back on the seven synonymous term and fill my consciousness with the seven synonymous term as steadfastly abiding in the faith, you see, there must be a quality of great activity, then that would really overcome the son of perdition. So he tells them, now let's just quickly run through the seven. I do this as an exercise, because you would also at home ask that question and say, well, I have to struggle somehow with the son of perdition within me, with the mortal in me, within me, and how can I overcome that? Well, we overcome it by going back to the true and perfect idea of man in its activity. We always must see in its activity, because here we are at the horizontal, the third horizontal, which asks that we are steadfastly abiding by the true idea. Therefore, it's an active consciousness. And so we could run through and say, from the point of view of mind, how would we fill our consciousness? And we will fill our consciousness and say, well, therefore, I have to be active. Mine is action. I have to be active in the new doctrine. I have to show forth actively, act boldly in the new doctrine. And only by doing that, we overcome the apathy within ourselves that says, oh, I don't need to know God. God will do the thing anyway. The idea will work in me anyway, so I don't have to know God. So we have to be active in knowing and understanding and study and searching what is the true idea of man, and that takes care of the son of perdition within me. Or from the point of view of spirit, I would say, well, then that new doctrine asks something very strongly, namely that I have a strong faith, a strong trust in the definition of God, a strong trust in spirit as being that which can overcome everything that is weak within me, that is not nurturing the good within me. If I nurture the good within me, if I admire and are grateful for the good already received, that overcomes the son of perdition in me, which is ungrateful, which is unwilling really to rely on the spiritual idea. Or if we go to soul, what we could see as an activity of soul, when we are active within ourselves, then we would say, and I have to see that I'm constantly identifying myself with the true idea man, which is the idea that is the outcome of the Christ consciousness, the Christ activity of the Father. So that I feel God is going to identify myself in soul constantly, and I have to accept that will happen within me. That only the good will come to me and identify itself as good in me. And that overcomes in me the very opposite leaning or the opposite attraction. It will overcome the son of perdition within me, namely that sense that I don't have to identify myself with the spiritual, that I have to identify myself with the body, with my person, and with the mortal as such. So in a way we are very active here in seeing that I claim my true identity, which is given by the Christ. Or in principle you could see that I have to stick steadfastly to principle's interpretation of itself, to principle's own interpretation of itself, so that I can overcome that son of perdition within me, which constantly says, well, you should also listen to people, you should also listen to the worldly opinions, you should also listen to some kind of theories and doctrines. And so I overcome really that son of perdition within me, which does not want really to subjugate itself or to be obedient only to principle's own interpretation of itself. Or if I go to life, I can see, what do I have to do actively? Actively, I should see that alone the Father, which is life, works in me. That the only life I have is the life which I get from the Father, and therefore from life itself, that the abundance of life is within me, and that I can actively always go back to that well of life, constantly draw from that well of life, constantly draw from God, so that that within me, which really tries to do things out of one's own will, out of one's own ability, that that is overcome within us. So the son of perdition at that point is that tendency to think, I can do it myself. I can do it all myself, instead of saying, I draw everything from the Father. Or, in truth, naturally, I claim actively that I have no other consciousness but the consciousness of truth. And so I begin to establish within myself the Son of Man, the true Son of Man, which is claiming the consciousness of truth, the Son of God. And that naturally overcomes within me all that which is doubting the truth, which is questioning the truth, all that which is insecure in the truth, that is overcome within me, because I can rely fundamentally and entirely on the consciousness of the Christ, that I have the mind of Christ. And so the son of perdition, the Antichrist, that which says you don't know, you have not the right understanding, you have not the full understanding, you have not that understanding which is necessary for this case, all that son of perdition argument is overcome within me. And finally, I may go to love and say, well, what should be my active attitude towards my true manhood? And I say, the greatest activity is to rest in peace. The greatest activity is to sit back and see that something within me is at peace, that rest in action is the most peaceful activity, so that inwardly I feel the whole plan of love is operating right at this point, and that overcomes the son of perdition. The son of perdition, which always will say, you have to be a busybody, you have to run around to do things. The more you run around, the more you're active and try to manage everything and to be the manager of every detail. That's the son of perdition. That does not allow the Christ to operate in its own way. I interfere with the plan of love. So perhaps in this way I could really demonstrate that 2 Thessalonians, and if you go back to Paul, you will see that he uses similar ideas in order to tell the Thessalonians, make yourself the son of God. Just don't say, there is the son of God. We are the son of God. Go and do something about it. And that brings us further to the last of the four in that Christianity column, to 1st, 2nd, and 3rd letter of John. Yes, that first, second, and third letter of John is quite a little marvel in it by itself. What should it really tell us? It is, again, we calculate. It should tell us that fundamentally man is perfect, that the idea of man is perfect and man has its own perfection. That's nice. But we also have seen in that vertical that the purpose of it is that we are showing forth that we are the representative of that perfect idea, man. And now in John we see something most interesting, namely, what is that representative of God? Is it a bodily man that is perfect, or what is it? Is it highfalutin concept of a ghostly man that is perfect, or is it an esoteric concept of a perfect man? What is really perfect man? And the difficulty which we have is that we always try somehow to spiritualize our concept of a mortal in order to see the perfect man. We still have as the cause or as the foundation, the mortal, and then think, but the mortal is not perfect, so the perfect man is a perfect mortal. And we just rise the mortal to some kind of a view that is perfect. And so we would like to see every mortal as a perfect mortal. Now, the three letters of John show something completely different. Namely, if it is the point of intersection, we have to ask ourselves, what is the horizontal? The horizontal says, well, it's proving the new faith by living it. By living what? By living what is the it? By living really that sense that we have seen that man comes only in focus after the Word and the Christ and then at the point of Christianity. That therefore he is not just, or that he is not at all a perfect mortal, and that he actually has nothing to do, so to say, with any concept of a... How can I say that? You know what I mean. So not to have a mortal picture that is perfect, but to have something completely different. And that is what John wants to show. He has written three letters. The first is rather longish, then two small letters, very short letters. But all those three letters have a common denominator. They all are written in the four, not in the seven. They are written always, now, no matter what they write, the introduction is in the Word, Christ, Christianity, and Science, and they write and the whole letter, they build it up in the Word order, then the Christ order, then the Christianity order, then in the Science order, but it's always Word, Christ, Christianity, and Science to explain what man is. And this has always fascinated me, because we know John, that as a writer, he was always the most scientific writer of all of them. The Gospel of John is built up in the candlestick order, in the Science order, which means that the seven synonymous terms are explained as four. So the whole Gospel of John is showing really signs as the Word, signs as the Christ, signs as Christianity, signs as science, therefore the four in the orders. Also, Revelation, John was being used by Jesus to be the transcriber, so to say, of the revelation of Jesus, which he had from his Father. And what Revelation shows, we know that when we did Revelation, or when we did the Apocalypse together with the Revelation, that John the Revelator is a very scientific writer, that he always writes in orders, either in the sevenfold order or in the fourfold order, and he climaxes his whole view with the city four square, therefore again with the fourfold order. And we know from ancient manuscript that Jesus really was indicating to John that we are the city. He's conversing with John, and finally Jesus said, there is a city, and we are the city. We are the calculus of being. That is what I wanted to bring out when I didn't find my words. I don't know if you would find the words to show that if we want to have a spiritual idea of man, it's so difficult to get away from the concept of man as a mortal, or the image of man as a mortal, of a two-legged being, and finally to overform that whole concept of man into a spiritual idea called man. But the man is only a symbol, is only a term for what? And John was always trying to show that actually that what we should call man should be the divine infinite calculus, should be that consciousness. What is the divine infinite calculus? Would be that consciousness which constantly is conscious of thinking or being aware in the categories of being, in the fourfold operation of being, in the word order, the Christ order, Christianity order, the science order. If that consciousness is entertained, then we could give to that consciousness the name man. And in this way, lift out, really, man out of a mortal consciousness. Therefore, not to lift out an imperfect mortal into a perfect mortal, but to lift out a mortal consciousness out to the point of an immortal consciousness. That's why I am so hot, really, on that point, that we are thinking in categories. You know, that has followed my life all through my life since I touched Christian Science. That more and more, first it was a sense that we have to think in tonality, no more in words. That was the entry, can you say, the entry into that new consciousness. And to begin to have first a tonality of mind, a tonality of spirit, of soul, principle, life, truth and love, to have a tonality sense, to get free of words, so that I don't even have to pronounce myself correctly in a language, be it German or being English. I don't have to do that. I'm not a linguist. I have to teach a spiritual language. And that spiritual language is something quite different than a word language. And what I have to bring out is that spiritual language that can only be taught through tonality, not through terms. And the terms are helping us first to get that tonality. But when we have the tonality of the seven, and perhaps afterwards the tonality of the four, as we culture them here, and the tonality of the four levels, no more as terms, but as tonality, then we touch the language of spirit. And that language of spirit naturally has a different concept of what is in the language called man, a spiritual language. That man we can drop, so to say, for that consciousness which is able to think constantly in the categories of being. That's man. That's the consciousness. And so, here John, in his letters also, just as in his other writings, tries really to show that now are we the sons of God. We know that very well from the church, and from the church reading, behold, that we are now the sons of God. But when he describes that son of God, that we are the children of God and sons of God, he describes them through the categories of the world order, the Christ order, the Christianity order, and the science order. That to him is man. That has nothing to do anymore with a mortal sense of man, but with a consciousness that is consciously conscious of the categories of being. So, what is here the point that John is aware of? He depicts now here in these three letters always those fours more or less in the same way. Only that in the first letter he writes universally. He writes his thesis, so to say, universally. Then afterwards he can see that he has to write it also to the church, which is collectively, in the second letter of John. Then he addresses the church and says, which is a smaller a group, a collective group. And then the third letter is to an individual and shows the very same calculus for the individuals. He writes to a man called Gaius, something like that, Gaius, to an individual. So he has three letters, but those three letters fundamentally have one common denominator. But he could see that it applies universally, the first letter, that it applies collectively to the church, and that it applies individually to each individual here, Gaius. And in those three letters, he uses the same symbolism, or the same, not the same, yeah, symbolism also, but the same specific tonality of word and Christ and Christianity and science. Namely, when he speaks about the word, he always speaks about the word as go and walk in the word order. Go and walk, so to say, in the way of life. So the word here is walking in the way of life. What does that mean? It's not the road, it's not the highway, number so and so. It's going the ordered understanding of the world order. Going along the order of the 7 days of creation. Culturing, so to say, constantly that way of life that brings us from the first initial light that comes into our consciousness, let there be light, to the day of rest in the seventh day. There is the law of creativity. And so he addresses himself to in these letters first and says, go the way of life. Don't miss the way of life. Go along the way of life. Don't try to take heaven in storm. Go step by step. Then when he tells about the Christ, it's constantly saying, and that has a Christ within itself. It begins to translate itself to you, and it begins to reform you, so that you are not going the way of life for nothing, without any effect, without have any impact on you. Go that way of life, and you will see that it has a Christ within itself, and that it will be reforming you, translating you. What else does he have? That it translates itself to you. Yeah. Oh yes, he says, and that translates itself right down to the flesh. That it has its impact like on the flesh, just like Mrs. Eddy's definition of the Christ, that the Christ is a divine manifestation of God that comes to the flesh to destroy incarnate error. He says, you are not going in vain that. You see, we are on the fourth horizontal, where we prove it in our life, so that it proves itself also in the flesh. So that he teaches them that has a Christ impact on you. Then when he talks about the third side, again, he has more or less always the same concept of Christianity, that he says, and then the Christ dwells in you. Then the Spirit of God dwells in you. And you have a great sense of a dwelling sense, that something big dwells in man as the Savior of the world. That's the important point. That he says that Christ dwells in you not for your sake, but for the sake of saving the whole world. He breaks those limits in the consciousness of man, which constantly says, well, I am going to demonstrate something for myself, for my body, for my family, for my business, for my. And he says, no, this is too small, this is too limited. You demonstrate it as something that has a universal impact. You can't have a spiritual idea that is limited to yourself. Every spiritual idea is universal and has a universal impact. That's why we feel, if we really could sit together for a whole week or 2 weeks of one mind and seeing more clearly about the structure of the one being, that really that should shake the world, that it should shake the earth. And we may not realize how it shakes it, but why is the world shaken? Who has shaken the world in the last years? Why is it that suddenly from since two, three decades, the world is being shaken? Why is it? Who did shake it? Well, it must be a spiritual idea, but nothing else but the spiritual idea can shake the world. The devil can't do it because it doesn't exist. The Antichrist can't do it. Evil can't do it because it doesn't exist, so it cannot do something. The only thing that can do something is the Christ idea. So I feel very strongly that we have a great responsibility that if we culture the spiritual atmosphere of a true subject like the Christianity matrix, or like next week, the development of the spiritual idea since 1866, that we entertain a great spiritual Christ idea, and that is going to demonstrate itself in the flesh, in the world. And it is the responsibility is on our shoulder. The government is on our shoulder. And therefore, John here in his letter gives us a wonderful insight into that activity. So he says, well, that in Christianity, you know that the Christ Spirit dwells in you. He takes place, dwells in you. Not outside, not on cloud nine. And then, as the last point, he says, and this is the way how you gain understanding. You gain that understanding by demonstration. If you demonstrate it in Christianity, that demonstration again feeds back to understanding, gives you a greater trust, a greater faith in your scientific understanding. And you are more firmly grounded than ever before in your scientific understanding. And that will solve problems. So that's what John was saying. Isn't it beautiful? To give us a completely new sense of man.